That means they don't have to accept they've lost Crimea. And the whole issue of Crimea should be pushed forward 15 years. So that means they don't have to discuss or give up Crimea, and the Russians don't have to say we'll never leave. So there is room for negotiations there, but one has to say the Ukrainians are not being offered that at the moment. And both sides think they can still make gains on the ground, that the battlefield still has things to offer them.
Finally, Patrick Coburn, do you think that the weapons flow from the U.S. and the West to Ukraine is exacerbating, prolonging the war?
Well, the Ukrainians need weapons. Then people trying to distinguish between defensive weapons and offensive weapons. That there isn't a great dividing line between the two. Ukrainians should clearly be armed. But then one gets to the situation, what will happen if there are lots of anti-ship missiles firing at the Russians at the Black Sea, in the Black Sea?
We have 10 seconds.
The problem is that this war is becoming another endless war, like we've seen in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Syria, and elsewhere, and all over the world.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, listener-supported community radio.
KBOO's spring membership drive is almost over, and we are inviting you to become a member right now by going to kboo.fm/give or by texting KBOO to 44321. Contribute during this last week of the 2022 spring drive, and your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $7,000 thanks to the generous support of a group of anonymous donors. Hurry and join the KBOO family today at kboo.fm/give and help us to meet our $56,000 spring goal.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor Portland Folk Music Society concerts. The spring series concludes on Saturday, June 11th with Hank Kramer, an old-fashioned folk singer from the American West. Hank Kramer can play and sing more than 1,000 modern and traditional songs. The Portland Folk Music Concerts are at the Reedwood Friends Church on Southeast Steel Street in Portland. For information, go to kboo.fm and click on Community Events.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, some parents say police were too slow reacting to a gunman slaughtering children at a Texas school. U.S. senators call for change in the wake of this tragedy and the many other mass shootings across America. And a West Lynn man faces bias crime charges related to neo-Nazi propaganda on a fence at a facility that helps refugees and immigrants in Portland. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, May 26, 2022. I'm Annette Newell, so glad to have you with us. The teenager who committed the country's latest gun massacre reportedly bought two assault rifles and ammunition legally just days after turning 18 on May 22nd. The shootings at Robb Elementary School in Texas killed 19 children and two teachers. Roz Brown reports.
The latest mass shooting that left 19 schoolchildren and two of their teachers dead in a small Hispanic community outside of San Antonio has renewed calls for Congress to take action. At a Wednesday news conference, Texas Governor Greg Abbott said there's little known about the motive of the gunman, who appears to have posted about his intentions online just 30 minutes before the shooting occurred.
The gunman was 18 years old and reportedly a high school dropout. There has been no criminal history identified yet. There was no known mental health history.
Despite multiple mass shootings in Texas, Abbott has presided over legislative sessions that have seen lawmakers weaken gun regulations. The National Rifle Association's annual meeting in Houston was on the governor's schedule this week, but he declined to say whether he still plans to attend. Following the governor's remarks, former Texas Congressman Beto O'Rourke, who is running against Abbott in November, approached the stage and accused him of doing nothing to address gun violence. Once outside, O'Rourke railed against those who blame such shootings on mental illness, arguing for universal background checks and red flag laws consistently blocked by Congress.
It is absolutely wrong. In fact, it is insane. The governor talks about mental health. It is insane that we allow an 18-year-old to go in and buy an AR-15. What the hell did we think he was going to do with that? This one is on us.
Uvalde School Superintendent Hal Harrell commended Robb Elementary teachers.
If it weren't for them, along with the law enforcement that came, that were willing to cradle their kids, get them out of the classroom when it was safe, when they were guided, that says volumes.
Less than 2 weeks ago, 10 primarily black grocery shoppers were gunned down in a Buffalo, New York supermarket by a teenage gunman who proclaimed racist conspiracy theories often referred to as the Great Replacement. 82% of black adults and 58% of Hispanics say gun violence is a very big problem in the U.S., while only 39% of white adults agree, according to Pew Research. I'm Roz Brown.
Students at Grant High School staged a walkout today calling for gun control legislation following the horrific school mass shooting on Tuesday in Texas, which resulted in 19 elementary students and two teachers' deaths. Showing solidarity with other students nationwide, the group is calling for stricter background checks for those buying guns. Junior Keon Doherty said, quote, "Every time there's a threat or anything like that at school, there are students who don't show up because kids are in fear." Doherty says many students feel they're being trained for preparedness for shooters, and yet not enough is being done to prevent these events from happening in the first place. According to data collected from Education Week, which has been tracking school shootings since 2018, about 120 incidents have been documented. Tuesday's massacre was the 27th school shooting of 2022. Parents think the police responding to a gunman locking himself into a Texas elementary school were too slow to break in and stop him. With more on the story, it's KBOO's Josh Salem.
Law enforcement authorities are facing criticism over how long they waited to storm an Uvalde Elementary School classroom in which a teenage gunman had barricaded himself. That gunman killed 19 children and two teachers. Questions also remain whether an armed school district security officer outside Robb Elementary exchanged fire with the attacker, 18-year-old Salvador Ramos, when he first arrived at the school. The motive for the attack remains under investigation. Ramos had no known criminal or mental health history. According to witnesses, frustrated onlookers repeatedly urged police officers to charge into the school. In fact, Texas Department of Public Safety Director Steve McCraw said Wednesday that 40 minutes to an hour elapsed from when Ramos opened fire on the school security officer to when the tactical team shot him. McCraw did add, quote, "The bottom line is law enforcement was there. They did engage immediately. They did contain in the classroom," end quote. An anonymous law enforcement official familiar with the investigation said the Border Patrol agents had trouble breaching the classroom door and had to get a staff member to open the room with a key. Upset that police were not moving in more quickly, a parent, Javier Cazares, raised the idea of charging into the school with several other bystanders. He allegedly said, quote, "Let's just rush in because the cops aren't doing anything like they are supposed to," end quote. Before the school attack, Ramos shot and wounded his grandmother at the home they shared. He then ran out the front door to a truck parked in front of the house and raced away. The grandmother was hospitalized. For KBOO News, I'm Josh Salem.
Among the many calling out for a response from our leaders and real change after the horror in Texas was Oregon U.S. Senator Ron Wyden. Here's what he said to fellow lawmakers on the U.S. Senate floor.
This morning around the country, millions and millions of parents drop kids off at school. and they were fearful. In the country that we all believe is and must continue to be the greatest country on earth, parents dropped their kids off at school in fear that a gunman would walk into their classrooms and murder them. Let's think about that. And it has been going on for decades, decades in our country. We can remember the sinking, empty feeling after Sandy Hook. For a few days, there was a glimmer of hope that the Senate would do something on a bipartisan basis. But then, the other side caved to the gun lobby. Congress has done nothing in response to all this carnage in our schools, in our grocery stores, in our churches. Mr. President, atrocity after atrocity after atrocity. And yet people still live in fear that their kids are next. They live with hopelessness due to the fact that their elected officials are unwilling to act. Mr. President, there are no excuses left. This happened in a state that's flooded with guns. There was armed security at the school, and still 19 kids and two teachers are dead. Still, their families are broken. No excuses. Perhaps that's why I've heard multiple Republicans say today, there's nothing you can do to stop the shootings, that they're just going to happen. That's the way it is. They're going to happen regardless. I just believe with all my being. That's just nonsense. And it's ridiculous coming from so many senators who haven't lifted a finger to do anything about the violence. My wife always says I'm a glass half full guy. I try to be positive, always about bringing the two sides together. But on this issue, I don't know what else to say. The truth is that if we act, then maybe, maybe it'll be possible to prevent another massacre in another school. That should be enough. That should be enough, Mr. President. The 100 of us here in the Senate are the ones with the power to act. Not anybody else. It's about us. So, senators, we got a choice. Either we can choose to act on moral courage or just let the fear and hopelessness win out. As far as I'm concerned, if you don't have the moral courage to act here on the Senate floor, or at least try to prevent more of these massacres, then you ought to hang it up, go home, let somebody else have the job.
The words of Oregon U.S. Senator Democrat Ron Wyden. Connecticut was the scene of another one of America's worst school shooting tragedies, Sandy Hook. One of that state senators spoke out. Here's U.S. Senator Christopher Murphy.
14 kids dead in an elementary school in Texas right now. What are we doing? What are we doing? Just days after a shooter walked into a grocery store to gun down African-American patrons, we have another Sandy Hook on our hands. What are we doing? There have been more mass shootings than days in the year. Our kids are living in fear every single time they set foot in a classroom because they think they're going to be next. What are we doing? Why do you spend all this time running for the United States Senate? Why do you go through all the hassle of getting this job, of putting yourself in a position of authority, if your answer is that as this slaughter increases, as our kids run for their lives, we do nothing? What are we doing? Why are you here? If not to solve a problem as existential as this. This isn't inevitable. These kids weren't unlucky. This only happens in this country and nowhere else. Nowhere else do little kids go to school thinking that they might be shot that day. Nowhere else do parents have to talk to their kids, as I have had to do, about why they got locked into a bathroom and told to be quiet for 5 minutes just in case a bad man entered that building. Nowhere else does that happen except here in the United States of America, and it is a choice. It is our choice to let it continue. What are we doing? In Sandy Hook Elementary School, after those kids came back into those classrooms, they had to adopt a practice in which there would be a safe word that the kids would say if they started to get thoughts in their brain about what they saw that day, if they started to get nightmares during the day, reliving stepping over their classmates' bodies as they tried to flee the school. In one classroom, that word was monkey. And over and over and over through the day, kids would stand up and yell, monkey, and a teacher or a paraprofessional would have to go over to that kid, take them out of the classroom, talk to them about what they had seen, work them through their issues. Sandy Hook will never, ever be the same. This community in Texas will never, ever be the same. Why? Why are we here? If not to try to make sure that fewer schools and fewer communities go through what Sandy Hook has gone through, what Uvalde is going through. Our heart is breaking for these families. Every ounce of love and thoughts and prayers we can send, we are sending. But I'm here on this floor to beg, to literally get down on my hands and knees and beg my colleagues. Find a path forward here. Work with us to find a way to pass laws that make this less likely. I understand my Republican colleagues will not agree to everything that I may support, but there is a common denominator that we can find. There is a place where we can achieve agreement that may not guarantee that America never, ever again sees a mass shooting, that may not overnight cut in half the number of murders that happen in America. It will not solve the problem of American violence by itself. But by doing something, we at least stop sending this quiet message of endorsement to these killers whose brains are breaking, who see the highest levels of government doing nothing, shooting after shooting. What are we doing? Why are we here? What are we doing?
That was Connecticut Democratic U.S. Senator Christopher Murphy. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Making Contact. At 6, it's Rose City Native Radio. Then at 7, the Indigenous Power Hour. Tonight's weather, cloudy skies with a few showers after midnight, the low down to 54. Tomorrow's weather, cloudy with a high near 61. A rainy weekend's on the way with highs in the high 50s. Today in history, on this date in 1897, the first copies of the classic vampire novel Dracula appeared in London bookshops. Our quote of the day is from its writer, Bram Stoker. There are darknesses in life and there are lights, and you are one of the lights, the light of all lights. So what are some of the historical factors that have contributed to our country reaching this point with mass shootings and school shootings? For insight on that, I talked to Oregon State University history professor Dr. Chris Nichols.
In the 20th century, when you have weapons of mass destruction, new technologies. You've got new kinds of media representations of this, a kind of cult of the military. We sometimes talk about this, you know, in scholarship as civil religion. One of the parts of American society that is most admired is the military. One of the parts of society that's least admired are career politicians, people in Congress, the presidency. It wasn't always that way, but we've built up a kind of cult of the military, a cult of the flag, a cult of the gun, that has made it incredibly hard to pass even modest, even well-regarded and widely popular gun control measures. And so that's part of it. There's special interests. The sale of weapons is now a huge thing. And the kind of fear-mongering related to that is enormous. You can look at anybody can Google and look at some of these numbers, but when there's an election and when there's fear-mongering in the election about, be it immigrants at the border or viruses or possible foreign threats, things that actually wouldn't make much of a manifestation in American domestic society, you see gun sales go way up. And, you know, of course, people profit from that. So there's a profit motive there as well. And then finally, I think there's a normalization component here. We've normalized this such that it barely registers for long. You know, one of my students said to me the other day, I knew there was a mass shooting in Buffalo, but I didn't know there were two others.
Yeah. Well, right? Wasn't there like five or so? I remember there were a bunch of different ones that happened.
Absolutely. And you see copycat ones and you don't see as much journalistic coverage. I mean, so how do we get here or how do we go somewhere else? I mean, the other thing is I think Americans are totally oblivious to the fact that we're the most civilian gun-owning country in the world by a factor of an astonishing amount. And our near peers are countries like Yemen. It's a little bit like our incarceration states in the U.S. Our near peers there are Russia and North Korea, right? I mean, these are not the countries you want to admire in these cultural practices, like imprisoning people or having weapons running around in your society. And yet we've turned that on its head and made that like an American value. You can see that on bumper stickers. You can see that in how people act and behave and think and why they even buy guns in the first place when they feel worried about foreign terrorism or something. Which means it's an incredibly intractable problem that Congress is having a hard time trying to solve and state legislatures are. The thing that strikes me is when you have police chiefs in virtually every major city crying out for gun control, it is astonishing to me that at the federal level, you don't see it, right? I mean, these are the people who are the law and order folks. I mean, they are as far right as you can get if you think about people who would want gun control, would put people in prison, would stop murders, right? These things that are purportedly, you know, the most conservative kinds of politics in American society. And yet, where it runs aground on is the shoals of individualism, that Americans really believe in having their stuff. And in this case, it's very explicitly a gun, a weapon to protect themselves, others. And frankly, there's another component to it. There's this imagined reality, which doesn't match up with any study that I've seen, that by having a gun, you are safer. By having weapons in your home or having weapons in case you're attacked, you're safer. In fact, virtually every study I've ever seen suggests that there are higher risks for everyone around you, including your loved ones, if you have a firearm. I have a chart that I show in my survey class. The US's near peer on mass shootings is Mexico, and theirs is like 6 for every 100 of ours or something like that. And that's mostly cartel violence.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, and we're...
Yeah. But the NRA is so powerful.
They're not even that powerful anymore. I mean, it's an interesting thing. They're perceived to be powerful. They are powerful, but they're not that powerful anymore. They've shown that they're corruption, incompetence. They're double dealing or self-dealing. Yeah. But, you know, I think what's really powerful is this kind of iconic, amorphous, impossible to defeat, like Second Amendment halo of beliefs and the irrational but deeply, deeply held view that you can save people you care about by having weapons. And there are limited cases where that's been true. And of course, there's like, as you know, as we know in Oregon, right, there's plenty of places in the state where you need to have firearms to keep coyotes or rabid animals or, you know, other things safe, right? I mean, you have ranchers and farmers and people in the timber industry need weapons for a variety of things, but that doesn't mean your average, you know, homeowner in an urban area needs multiple weapons. I don't recall the exact statistic, but if someone has more than one weapon, they're likely to have more than 10. I mean, it increases up. So the other thing about gun owning in the U.S. over time, I know two scholars who are writing big synthetic histories of this that are going to be mind-blowing when they come out, is that it used to be that people just had one or two weapons, right? And they had a weapon to protect themselves or they had a weapon in case of their farm having an issue or whatever. And now it's like, you know, you have collector weapons, you have weapons you display, you have weapons you shoot for fun, you've got weapons that are borderline illegal. So part of the kind of cult of the gun and cult of the military has been built around a kind of consumer model of weapons and fun with weapons, which defies the reality of these are killing instruments, right? And so if they get stolen, they become part of crimes potentially. If a child finds them and they aren't properly locked, they become part of something horrific.
I remember just driving up to people's homes after they lost a child because the other kid got a hold of the gun and there was an accident. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I had to do that story again in North Carolina, again and again and again. And it's just senseless. Mm-hmm. And other countries like Australia, for example, they had a mass shooting, and what did? They decided, let's get rid of guns. And they started doing more gun control, and they've never had another incident like that since then.
And we also have, when we talk about guns, we also have all kinds of other things. You're right, ammunition is an area you can do a lot with. We've got ammunition that can penetrate things, can blow up, can harm stuff in your skin, in your body. We've got body armor running around. You know, all of these mass shootings now seem to be people who are fully outfitted in military, like special ops gear practically, right? And so when you talk about limiting the sort of weapons of war in society, there's a whole range of things that goes with that, which isn't just assault weapons. It's the fact that you can get your hands on, you know, high explosive rounds. You can sniper weapons. I mean, it's you know, the U.S. is awash in a sea of military weapons.
And that was OSU history professor Dr. Chris Nichols. Police have arrested a local man they say is responsible for defacing a local center for immigrants and refugees with neo-Nazi propaganda. KBOO's Jeffrey Wade has the story.
A West Lynn man is facing bias crime charges, according to information released Wednesday from the Portland Police Bureau. Allegedly, Jarl Judson Rockhill, who is 35, placed neo-Nazi propaganda on a fence outside of a facility in Northeast Portland that helps refugees and immigrants. Court documents reveal the incident happened on April 23rd, where a large neo-Nazi sticker was placed on the fence surrounding the refugee community organization near Northeast Gleason Street and 102nd Avenue. Video surveillance shows the suspect and his pickup truck at the scene of the crime, and a warrant for his arrest was obtained, culminating yesterday afternoon when Rockhill was arrested during a traffic stop in Clackamas County. Rockhill has been booked into jail on a warrant for bias crime in the second degree. In addition to a tattoo on his arm that appears to be the white supremacist symbol known as, quote, Samarod, a search warrant found multiple examples of evidence in Rockhill's home linking him to the crime. Several online photos show Rockhill with members of various white supremacist groups. Portland Chief Chuck Lavelle said on Wednesday, quote, "We work regularly with the IRCO and continue to build relationships so that our immigrant community can trust police and reach out to us when they need to," end quote. Anyone with information about Rockhill is urged to send tips to PPB at crimetips@portlandoregon.gov. With the KBOO Evening News, I'm Jeffrey Wade.
This Mental Health Awareness Month, it's important to note that a recent study ranked Oregon as having the highest prevalence of mental illness in the country. As Eric Tegedoff reports, there are many ways to support people struggling with their mental health, including peer support.
May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and there are many stressors for people right now, from the pandemic to the economy. There's a high prevalence of mental illness in Oregon compared with other states. Organizations are figuring out different ways to reach people who may be struggling. At the Mental Health and Addiction Association of Oregon, people with lived experiences provide peer support services. Adrian Scavera with the organization says having peers provide help is a unique way to connect with people.
The fact that folks can openly share about their previous life experience can really be meaningful when it comes to reducing stigma.
Scavera says peer support services have become more recognized and valued over her time working with the association. An annual study from Mental Health America ranked Oregon in the bottom five this year for factors such as mental health prevalence and access to care. Dr. Rhonda Randall with United Healthcare says she's noticed less stigma around conversations around mental health, especially among young people. She says for a long time, mental health care was siloed from other parts of the healthcare system.
Mental health is part of our health. It's a conversation you should be having with your primary care physician when you go get your annual checkup.
Scavera says everyone is dealing with mental health issues to some degree. She says people shouldn't be judgmental and should keep an open mind so they can listen and learn from others about their experiences.
That can really help to challenge the misconceptions that exist about people with lived experience. Because at MHAO, we believe that everyone can recover, and that what that looks like is also going to look different from person to person.
For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
The shuttering of a wood treatment facility in a West Eugene neighborhood does not mean decades-long dioxin contamination goes with it. Dioxins are persistent organic pollutants, meaning they take a long time to break down once they're in the environment, according to the Environmental Protection Agency. As Chance Dorland reports, activists say more research and cleanups needed for the low-income community in Oregon.
As a West Eugene wood treatment facility continues the process of reducing operations, activists are seeking accountability for contamination that remains in the community. Following a history of fines and hundreds of complaints each year from Bethel Danabo neighborhood residents, in January, J.H. Baxter announced it would mothball its facility. But Travis Knudsen with the Lane Regional Air Protection Agency says dioxin contaminations from the facility remain.
The J.H. Baxter that was operating in 2021 is not the same facility that was operating in the 1940s or even into the 1970s and 1980s. And so that dioxin contamination is believed to be legacy from longer periods ago.
The Environmental Protection Agency says dioxins are highly toxic and can cause cancer, reproductive and developmental problems, damage to the immune system, and can also interfere with hormones. Knudsen says community advocate organizations have been helpful to his agency as it investigated complaints in the Bethel Danabo neighborhood, where for decades, low-income residents have, in some cases, lived across the street from heavy industry.
There's a group of community members and local advocates who have said, we're really interested in this facility and we want to be a part of the conversation of regulatory intervention. We just had our 14th meeting.
Dylan Darling with the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality says his agency is still investigating how much dioxin contamination exists and how it can be removed.
The investigation and cleanup began at the facility itself and then has expanded into the nearby neighborhood. DEQ is in the process of having soil sampled to better understand the extent of the contamination and is also planning to clean up some of the yards at homes that are near the wood treatment facility.
Darlene says the issue of dioxin contamination is complex.